Well, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, November 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me to wrap this holiday week here on Bang the Book Radio. We got two segments coming your way here today. The first, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment, myself and Joe Everett helping me out this week with my picks and thoughts for the Bang the Book podcast entry. 22-27-6 on the season. Clearly not where I would like to be with that, but I got some good thoughts here for week 12. We also talked about the challenges with three Thanksgiving games, the Rams and Chiefs on a bye, all that type of thing. So very good segment there with Joe. After that, for the second half of today's show, unfortunately couldn't get it to work out with Brent's schedule to do a recording with us. Also didn't really work with my schedule either. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to take a look up and down the card here, look at some games that do appear to have had some sharp action this week, kind of talk about those, talk about some of those line moves, all that type of thing. Initially, Brent was hoping to send me over a list of games with some write-ups, but unfortunately, his remote access not working, and he's doing some other things here for the holiday weekend as well. So he wasn't able to send me over notes on the games, but I'll take a look up and down the odds screen here. Talk about some games that do appear to have had some pretty significant sharp action. Just sort of put my risk manager hat on, I guess, for a little bit here. And talk about some of these games for this weekend in college football and in the NFL. Over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Updated NFL power ratings from Danny Vorgs. You definitely want to make sure you're checking those out. About 60% on the season, about 57% lifetime in Danny's time over at Bang the Book. You want to take advantage of those. He had some great write-ups for the three Thanksgiving games. You certainly want to look to see what he's got for Sunday and Monday night football. Then also over at bangthebook.com, my college football power ratings have been updated. They were updated earlier on in the week. You could certainly take a look at those. Also, situational betting articles for the NBA, NHL, college basketball, and college football as well. So you got those over there at the website. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks are absolutely fantastic. Great detail in those write-ups. You want to make sure that you're checking those out before you get involved with the NHL betting market. I've got a UFC Fight Night 141 preview posted. We'll have all the stuff from Alan Moody and from Admir and from all of our writers that cover football and basketball for us over at bangthebook.com. Definitely want to make sure that you're keeping up to date with everything that we have, because as we talked about on Wednesday's segment with Wes Reynolds, very, very busy time of the year. We're doing all the hard work for you. We're doing all that legwork to help you out. Use it to your advantage over there at bangthebook.com. Don't forget about our free pick contests as well. You can get involved in those at any time. We're about 10 days or so away from the start of a new month, and we'll start up those monthly contests again. So you want to get involved in those. And, of course, you can do the Daily Streaker at any time. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Sign up over at DSI. Put in that promo code BTB200. It'll get you a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook up to $500. Same thing for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two segments here to wrap things up for this week on Bang the Book Radio. The first, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment. Once again, Joe Everett helping me out here for that one this week. Now, we did record this just before the Super Contest lines were out. As I'm recording the intro and the second half of today's show here, the Super Contest lines have been posted. So we did a little bit of speculating with those. I'll update after the end of the segment what we're looking at here for the Super Contest lines for Week 12. So without further ado, here is this week's Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and Joe Everett. All right, I'm joined now by Joe Everett of Draft Scouts and Insider Football. He's going to help me out here this week with our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for Week 12. Joe, how's it going today, man?
Going great. I think I've got all the work done, ready for some turkey, ready for some fam.
There you go, man. Sounds good. And as we look here at Week 12, which does start on Thursday with three games, we'll talk about that and the challenges that it presents here in a couple of minutes. My Bang the Book podcast entry, 22-27-6 on the year. Not particularly great, but things looking up a little bit here over the last 4 weeks with a 12-7-1 record. Bang the Book and bangthebook.com super contest entries, both 2-3 last week as well. The field, just 49.12% in week 11, 51.99% for the season. The gold, though, 56.25% last week, 53.82% for the season. So the sharper contest there with the gold doing a little bit better than the traditional, kind of a reversal of fortunes here over the last 2 weeks for a lot of public bettors that are on a lot of public sides. So we'll see what week 12 looks like. But Joe, as I mentioned there at the top of the segment, three Thursday games. And, you know, this is almost kind of like, I think the way that you sort of want to approach this here a little bit is you can kind of just think of those six teams that play on Thursday as teams that are on a bye week. We've got two of those though this week, the Rams and the Chiefs. But you know, that's one of the hardships here about this contest is that if you play the Thursday game, and some people will be forced into doing it because they just don't like the rest of the card. If you play the Thursday games here, you have to have your entire card filled out. And it is a very quick turnaround here, especially if you have a proxy, because the lines come out for the Super Contest about 6 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday night, not being released any earlier here, despite the Thanksgiving games. So that really throws a lot of challenges into the process this week.
I would have to think so, especially with one of those six being a very popular team in the Saints. And really, like, with the injury to Colt McCoy, I think a lot of people are thinking it's all Tank City for the Redskins. I mean, I'm on the contrary to that. But, yeah, I can't imagine trying to get, like you said, if it's a proxy, you've got somebody who's like, well, I'd really have to get these teams in if you really do like that. But I wouldn't blame it because, honestly, I am looking at the Saints. That's one of the teams I really like. So I guess you got to do what you got to do to get on the sides you want here because it's that's why I hate this contest, man. No totals. That's you're pinning one arm behind my back.
Well, and when you look at these six teams too, the Bears, they played Sunday Night Football against Minnesota, always a physical game when you take on Mike Zimmer's team. Very quick turnaround to play the 12:30 Eastern time game here against Detroit. As it turns out, looks like Mitch Trubisky's not going to play. And obviously, you know, once everyone listens to this segment, it'll be Friday morning. So they'll know already what happened in those games. But as we're recording this on Wednesday night, you know, that's kind of the thought process is, well, no Mitch Trubisky. Do I take a shot with the Lions, who I liked anyway because of the spot? Well, a lot of people may kind of be pressed into doing that. Redskins and Cowboys, no Alex Smith. Looks like maybe the initial line was kind of over-adjusted to Colt McCoy. But as we talked about on Wednesday's show, Jason Garrett, 1-11 against the spread as the Cowboys head coach with less than 6 days of rest. That's the role for him here on Thursday night. So do you want to take Colt McCoy? No, probably not. Do you want to lay it with the Cowboys? No, probably not. So that crosses that game off the board. And then Falcons and Saints, you know, the Saints are completely rolling right now. And even if Deion Jones comes back, it may not help Atlanta too much in this spot. But also Atlanta, pretty good offensive team. They've had 12 fourth quarter blown leads in games that they've lost with Dan Quinn at the helm. So they play really well for the first three quarters, just can't finish it off. With a spread of 12.5 or 13, whatever the Super Contest line winds up being here, you kind of like the Falcons in that spot. But also, do you like the Falcons enough to lock in all five of your plays? Probably not. So, you know, this week in particular, with a bye and then with a couple of byes for the Rams and Chiefs, and then six teams playing on Thursday, it's hard, man. It really narrows down the card a lot, and you wind up having to make some tough decisions on Sunday. So, you know, again, I know that I tend to do a lot of complaining with this contest and, you know, talking about all the hardships and the difficulties that are there with it, but it is the nature of the beast, and it is a good talking point here for anybody that's out there in a super contest type pool of their own, or for listeners that are actually in the super contest. It's a challenging thing to lock in all of your plays here, even with some situations here on Thursday that may feel advantageous.
I'm sitting there thinking about it though. Like for people that think that Detroit Lions is just gimme without Trubisky, I really think the Bears aren't going to be too far off. It's I think you're right in saying, you know, you don't want to take the Cowboys, the Redskins with a little bit of an unknown at quarterback to some think, but like I'm on the Redskins and probably the Bears on those games, but I would advise like maybe the best situation might be to stay away. I'm of the opinion though, like I think it said it on the last appearance, you know, Colt McCoy is not going to be the end of the world here. And I just don't know that I'd be more about listening to those numbers you just gave on Jason Garrett in this situation and kind of heed that advice.
Well, and of course, everyone listening to this will know what happened in those Thursday games. So, you know, I did kind of like the Lions. I would go Redskins. I'd probably go Falcons. But, you know, again, none of those three I feel confident enough in to lock in this full five-play card. And certainly not as we're recording the segment here, because the Super Contest line's unfortunately not even out yet. They're still about a half hour to 45 minutes away from being posted. But, again, with the holiday, with trying to move some things around, stuff like that, we got to do what we got to do. So I want to bring you my thoughts here for Week 12, looking at the Sunday games. Those will be the ones I'm probably looking at. We'll see as we get a better idea here of Tennessee versus Houston. Late line opening for Monday Night Football with the Marcus Mariota injury. So not a whole lot of clarity so far on what that game could look like. But we'll go ahead and start at the top of the board for Sunday here. The first game by rotation order, Jacksonville and Buffalo. You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here. You know, I watched the end of that Jacksonville game. I was on Pittsburgh last week in the Super Contest. I wasn't on them in the Super Contest, but I thought that they were a good play, you know, because they had played so well here defensively. Jacksonville's defense hadn't really been fixed yet up until that point. And then Jacksonville last week played about as good of a game defensively as they could play against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it still wasn't enough. So you watch Jacksonville, you watch the players wandering around during that replay of Roethlisberger's touchdown run. You watch kind of the body language after the call is upheld. I don't know how much is left in the tank for this Jacksonville team. You know, as it is, they're a long shot to make the playoffs. They're going from, you know, relatively the top of the mountain, playing that AFC title game. And realistically speaking, they probably should have beaten the Patriots in that game. Through three quarters, they were the better team. Now you look at where they are, and you just kind of wonder here, what's left for them the rest of the season? What do they have left to play for? You know, they're going up on the road to Buffalo. Weather's not going to be great. It never is this time of the year in Buffalo. Blake Bortles facing another good defense. You know, look, if this team rallies, if they show some heart and some balls and some character, good for them. But I'm going to be on Buffalo here. They're off a bye. You know, we talked about it on Tuesday with Brian Blessing about the Buffalo Sabres and how teams kind of feed into each other a little bit. Maybe that's the case here for the Bills. And then also playoff revenge of their own in this spot. I just don't see Jacksonville being motivated going up to New Era Field to win this game. So I'll take Buffalo here. I'll take my chances with the +3.
I don't blame you at all. You know, Josh Allen is supposed to be back in this game. I think that's just an improvement. Matt Barkley did play pretty well for him, so that's their decision to make. The one element I'd bring up is Doug Marrone's return to Buffalo. You know, didn't go so well. He had an opt-out in his contract, and he just decided, you know what, it's best we part ways. So I would assume that's kind of a plus for Buffalo, really, like wanting to say, yeah, didn't want to stay here. Well, we've got something for you. I'm assuming that's the way it works. I do worry a little bit the Boye's back. And that defensive effort they had against the Steelers is just clear as day. You know, what's your worth? What's your value that's proven what they do without you? And Jacksonville without Boye, I think, has been the real difference. Everyone wants to talk about Jalen Ramsey. That A.J. Boye, the other corner, is very valuable to how they play defense. And I think his return, that's going to be a real low-scoring game here. So that's probably makes me want to even lean more with Buffalo, the home team. They're playing really good defense. And if Josh Allen wants to pull a few rabbits out of the hat and make some miracles happen, yeah, that's a Bills probably decide to have.
Well, and I'm certainly hoping for 3.5 here in the Super Contest. I don't think I'm going to get it. When you look out there in the marketplace right now, you've got 3 with extra juice, 3 minus 20. There are some 3.5s out there at the brick and mortars in Las Vegas. No 3.5s really in the offshore market. So hoping for 3.5, probably going to have to settle for 3. But again, you know, when you take 8 teams off the board here, you're down to picking 5 of the 12 games. And this is one that I do like, because I think at this point, Jacksonville is a straight fade candidate because they put so much into that game last week, didn't come out on the right side of it. Maybe they should have, maybe they shouldn't have, but I just don't see this team really getting all that excited to go up and play Buffalo here in week 12. Next game on the board that I'm kind of looking at, and I kind of like this one a little bit. I would classify it more in the picks category than the leans category. It's a game 255-256 in the offshore marker, in the rotation order at the sports books. San Francisco on the road at Tampa Bay. I understand that this is a very scary spot to back a team like San Francisco, but so far, San Francisco is the preferred side. We opened 3.5 flat. We're 3.5 with extra juice out there in the marketplace. Looking at the Westgate line right now, it's 3.5 minus 20 on San Francisco. But I imagine this would be a game that does come out 3.5 in the Super Contest odds. And, you know, now the Buccaneers are going back to Jameis Winston. And I don't know what they're doing here. I mean, Dirk Cotter is basically a one-armed man rowing a boat. He's just going in circles. It was going to be fired. They need an entire regime change. I think the 49ers are still invested. I think they're still interested. They're off of a bye. We love Kyle Shanahan on this show, as everybody knows. And when you look at this game, you've got a two-win team led by Nick Mullins getting only 3.5 traveling across the country. That tells me everything I need to know here. I like the 49ers this week.
I like it, too, just because Tampa Bay, I feel so terrible for them. It doesn't matter how far they move the ball, what their yardage and numbers, it's just scoreboard. And that proves to me they've got no willpower. And what Cotter's, but basically what Blake Bortles is doing to Jacksonville of sabotage, Dirk Cotter's doing the same thing, like the play calling. And I think he really needs to give up those reins to somebody else, but at this point, it's just running into the ground. Yeah, I'm never getting behind a team like that. You're going to give me Shanny plus the points. I'm in.
And, I mean, this is just one of those things, too. I mean, you know, we talk about at this time of the year, teams have a pretty good idea of what their goals are and what is actually attainable for them. And for Tampa Bay, virtually nothing is attainable. And now you've got this back-and-forth quarterback carousel with Fitzpatrick and Winston. Everybody knows that Dirk Cotter is gone. And there's probably a decent chance that the Buccaneers will also move on from Jameis Winston. You really have to wonder, you know, with injuries to Quan Alexander and then Levante David always seems to be hurt, you kind of wonder what the pulse is like in this locker room. I can't think that it's very good. You know, Dirk Cotter takes away the play calling duties. They have 500 yards 2 weeks ago and score 3 points. Last week, they should have gotten blown out by the Giants, but the Giants kind of did some Giants things in that game and sort of kept it a little bit closer than it needed to be. I just don't see for the life of me how this Tampa Bay team is invested, is motivated, is mobilized. And I really wonder, you know, they have to be questioning the leadership here from the top down. That has a trickle-down effect to the field. I think for the 49ers, you know, look, they had their woe-is-me period with Jimmy Garoppolo being done for the year. But now you've got some guys, and specifically a guy like Nick Mullins. You know, Nick Mullins wants a backup job next year. Some of these players that are getting chances to play in the spotlight want playing time next year. For Tampa Bay, nobody knows what the future holds. I think you see that dynamic kind of play out here where one team gives a full effort and the other team doesn't.
No, I agree, especially on the term the Buccaneers, like how much is left of that defense. Their best tacklers are out. Quan, Levante, and even Justin Evans, that safety who's been playing well for him. He didn't play last week. It's just they're starting to drop like flies, and I do like what I've seen out of Nick Mullins. That's another factor to consider. This guy is really thinking about his future, what he can do, and what kind of good footage he can put out there. He's had another week off, another week of study with, you know, a great coaching staff to teach him. So, yeah, I'd be on that side plus the points. Why not?
Another one I'm looking at here this week, there have been so many times over my 4 years in this contest that I've sworn off taking the Cleveland Browns. I've probably already done it this year at some point too, but I feel like this week in the Battle of Ohio, the I-71 showdown here between Cleveland and Cincinnati, it has to be Cleveland this week. And I hope that AJ Green comes back this week because maybe it'll keep some people off of Cleveland. You know, the Browns, look, this is a team that is steadily improving. They're off the bye. And also, you got a week off for Baker Mayfield to catch his breath in his first NFL season and also work with Freddie Kitchens. And Freddie Kitchens has been phenomenal for this offense. They're keeping Baker upright. They're using Duke Johnson and Nick Chubb very, very effectively. This has been a series of brilliant game plans since they got rid of Todd Haley and Hugh Jackson. And Greg Williams may not get this job, but he's auditioning for some kind of job down the line, whether it's a DC role or maybe a head coaching gig, something like that. You know, when you look at this Bengals situation, they're off the bye. They get embarrassed by the Saints. Then they play a division game against Lamar Jackson, making his first start, and they can't stop him. They can't stop the running game. Some dude named Gus Edwards goes off on them. I don't think the Bengals are a team playing with a whole lot of confidence right now. The Browns are a confident team. They're happy with where they are. The only win in the last five games for the Bengals, they were +4 in turnover margin. The Browns are taking care of the football. They're taking care of Baker Mayfield. I hope A.J. Green comes back to keep some people off of the Browns side, because I'll take the oranger team here and take Cleveland.
We'll go more orange, but I agree with you. A.J. Green will attract the moths to the light. But I think the last time we talked Bengals on the show, it was just, well, A.J. Green doesn't play linebacker is the real issue here. Preston Brown, I think, is on IR again. Burfitt's got the hip issue. I think Hardy Nickerson now is who's starting. And you know, it's everybody knows who his dad was, but they need his dad as well. And maybe Marvin Lewis could strap one on, but I just don't. They're not stopping anybody is the real issue. And I'm with you. The offense is given a little extra time. I like what I've seen out of Freddie Kitchens, but the bottom line is there's just, I think, an edge on talent here. And Njoku is really starting to play into what's been expected of him. And I think the Browns, not only do they have to be the side, but I'm just looking at a Bengals team that just doesn't want to tackle anybody, a real issue. And Jesse Bates out there, he can't make all the plays. I think they're just Bengals just spread a little too thin here.
Yeah, and this is, you know, there are some interesting dynamics here. I mean, obviously the Bengals employing Hugh Jackson, I don't think that really bothers me too much, you know, because maybe it just adds a little bit more fuel to the fire for Cleveland. So I do really like the Browns here this week. They'll, in all likelihood, be on my card. So the three games I'm looking at as picks right now, Buffalo, San Francisco, and Cleveland. I got three leans for you here as well. And again, don't have the Super Contest lines as of yet. So I'm basically just going off of what I see out there at the Westgate Superbook. The Baltimore Ravens are -10.5 at the Westgate. I think that should be the Super Contest line here as well. I kind of like Baltimore this week with Oakland traveling cross country. This is a big number to lay, and it's a big number to lay with Lamar Jackson making his second career start. But I can't help but think, and this is something I probably didn't think of enough last week when we were talking about our Super Contest gold picks and we took the Arizona Cardinals. The Raiders gave a collective middle finger to Davis and Gruden last week, because they went out there and said, you know what, if this is a team that we're going to fight for the first overall pick, we're going to go out there and beat them. And we're going to give a giant FU to Gruden and Davis and everybody else involved in this whole tanking fiasco. So I think that was kind of a one-game boost for the Raiders. I don't think they can contain that or sustain that this week here. Back-to-back road trips, cross-country game, early kickoff, nothing to play for. Ravens with a much better defense than what Arizona was putting out there. And, of course, the Ravens, too, at 5-5, in the thick of the playoff hunt here in the AFC, the fact that Oakland showed up last week should put Baltimore on notice. I don't think they overlooked this game. They don't have any reason to based on the schedule. I think Baltimore can really run away with this one, really keep the Raiders to single digits, and then it's very tough, as you and I were talking about with Lamar Jackson on Monday. He's a tough guy to plan for. You know, that zone read, the mobile quarterback, things like that, that takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of attentiveness during the prep period. I don't think the Raiders have that. I kind of like Baltimore laying the big number here.
I'm on the same side. That's probably one of my favorite plays. I know it's, you know, classic me, playing chalk with a bunch of points. I don't care. Like, that, this is going to be the, I'd say, the pro version of Army versus Kent State. You know, the Raiders have a serious issue of want to, and there's problem with tackling. The Ravens running that triple, it's like they even have the three backs with Jackson on some packages, and there's a reason Gus Edwards is in there as opposed – well, he's in there more as opposed to Smith or Alex Collins and the other backs like Buck Allen. It's just he is so much more downhill. He's much more the fullback type and that up back. Like, not that it's like those triple option offenses by any means, but you do have to kind of have those similar roles, and that's where Edwards comes in. I mean, he's just a truckload. So that kind of forces those business decisions, and then you just keep reminding the defense of that A gap, and then the perimeter stuff can't help but start to work because, you know, you're softening them up. So I think this is going to be a problem, and this is a game the Raiders are not going to want any part of. And then, yeah, you add that element of travel with it. And once again, the playoffs start today. Ravens are in. So, yeah, I think they have no choice, but they can't overlook anyway. They got to play hard every week. And it's also a great edge to have a player like Jackson who he's just got a whole lot of I want to prove something. I still believe in his mind right now, he thinks he hasn't shown anybody anything yet. So I'm kind of expecting for a few wow moments in this game because this is a really crappy defense. We may see some big plays by the Ravens, and that's I think they're going to cover that. I know it's a big number, but that's the side I'll be on.
Well, and when you look at the play distribution last week for Baltimore, too, 53 rushes, 19 pass attempts for Lamar Jackson, and he was sacked twice. That's one of those games where you have to bring a high effort level. You know, if you're going to be playing smash mouth football at the line of scrimmage, you're going to face 45 or 50 rushing plays, if not more here, because, you know, the Raiders are not as competent defensively as the Bengals are, and the Bengals aren't very competent defensively. But if you're going to face 55 or 60 rushing plays, something like that, which is certainly a possibility here for Baltimore in this game, it's a question of effort. It's a question of motivation. It's a question of wanting to be there. I don't think Oakland wants to be there. I don't think Oakland wants to show that kind of effort. Baltimore should wear them down, should push them around the field. And again, the travel factor factors into that as well. Whereas Baltimore wears this game down, maybe it's a little bit dicey in the first half, but I think in the second half, we really see Baltimore take complete charge of this game. So the more I talk about this game, Joe, the more I think I could definitely be in on this one, especially hoping for a 10.5 out there in the Super Contest as opposed to 11. Another game that could be on my leans list here, the Miami Dolphins. They're plus 7.5 in the betting market right now. They take on the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, this is one of those games. They're getting Ryan Tannehill back, so I think it's kind of a question as to what we can expect for Miami. But at some point, Indianapolis can't play a perfect game. You know, they've been playing so well here of late. I know it's tough for you to hear that being in the area, but they've been playing so well of late that it's the week that the team has a little bit of a letdown. You know, they're in a divisional sandwich here. They blew out the Titans last week. They play on the road at Jacksonville next week where they can really drive a dagger into the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Dolphins aren't out of it. They're 5-5. They're not a great team, but they're still right there in the playoff hunt as well. I guess it's a pretty interesting anti-consensus play because I don't think a lot of people will be lining up to take Miami this week. The Colts were a top five consensus play last week against the Titans. I don't think you see a whole lot of Miami interest here. And that may wind up having me put it on the card, especially having to pick 5 of 12 games, as we've already talked about.
Now, it's a nice contrary pick. And one thing I'll agree with is like 7.5 right now. I think it's finally time. The Colts are probably overpriced, I guess. It's tough to take more than a touchdown. I believe in them. They've been really fortunate. I don't want to say fortunate. I mean, Frank Reich's been calling really good plays on third downs. I think, once again, what's your value? What is your value proven? What they're doing without you? How's Philadelphia doing on third down and fourth down now that Reich's gone? I'm just going to leave that one out there. But I think getting Tannehill back is a plus, no matter how many people want to criticize him. And Miami's defense, that's going to be a big factor in the difference between the Colts' performance in the last couple of weeks. Not to take anything away from the Titans, but I think that largely there was just a spot. The Tennessee coming off that high of whooping up on Belichick, I think, you know, a lot of wind was out of that sail there. Those two teams play again in a different week. I think we'd all agree there might be a different result, but Miami's no slouch, and that's a team I think that's getting a little healthier. And I was just that trio of linebackers too. All those guys can run, so it's I don't think Indianapolis is going to have their way without it. And then also Ryan Kelly, the center, will be out for the next few weeks, I think, but he's definitely not playing Sunday, so that's something to worry about for Colts, potential Colts backers there. And yeah, I wouldn't mind. I think that's if you're looking to gain that headway and get on the contrary, the Dolphins, I can't imagine many people sidling up on them, but it's not a bad pick. I mean, especially if you're getting the touchdown and hook.
One more game that I've got on my leans list here, and I think there's a chance that this number, especially with the perception of the Pittsburgh Steelers, comes out at 3.5 in the Super Contest. We've talked about this before on the show, but you know, Jeff Sherman and the guys over at the Westgate, they'll kind of put some wrinkles into this thing a little bit, give people some more decisions. I think Pittsburgh probably does come out 3.5 here in the Super Contest this week. If that is the case, I will have some interest in the Denver Broncos. Pittsburgh off of that huge win with that playoff revenge spot last week against Jacksonville. And honestly, I have to say, I haven't seen anything about it this week, but Ben Roethlisberger looked like he was concussed. I mean, he ran right into the giant tree trunk leg of his offensive lineman with that dive. He looked like he wasn't fully sure of where he was at the end of that game there against Jacksonville. So I kind of wonder if maybe there's a little bit of a residual, you know, a mild concussion or something like that in play for Roethlisberger. But, you know, first and foremost, back-to-back road games for Pittsburgh in Jacksonville last week, now going all the way out to the altitude to take on Denver in the Mile High City. You know, it's not like they go there all the time, so that's a little bit of a tough spot. And also, too, you know, this line did open 3.5, came down to 3. It's 3 kind of even money out there in the marketplace right now. But the Broncos last week got very fortunate to beat the Chargers. Now, they maybe weren't too fortunate to get inside the number as they were a touchdown dog, but they were outgained 479 to 325 in that game. And a lot of times what we see with these misleading final scores compared to the box score is that the market winds up fading that team the next week. So why aren't people fading Denver this week? Why aren't the sharp guys going against the Broncos? I think they can run the football in Pittsburgh a little bit here. I think now that they've got that three-back system all back and healthy, take some of the pressure, take some of the responsibility away from Case Keenum. I think this is a really tough spot for Pittsburgh here. So I do like Denver a little bit. Again, I'd like it more at the 3.5. But I think this is another one of those anti-consensus kinds of plays where, you know, Denver getting a road price, and specifically if it's 3.5, against a team in a bad spot, hard to pass on that.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. And then you're going against a team, too, that what's the win streak up to them? 6 games? Eventually the Steelers can't keep that up. I almost, like, if I was backing them for some postseason props, I'd hope they drop one just to, like, get it out of the way. But this might be that spot, second road game. It's always tough to play up in Denver, and these teams have a history. I'm pretty sure Denver's one up on them in the last 5 at least. So, yeah, it's not like Pittsburgh goes there and plays well all the time. So, it's yeah, it's, as far as nailing down a good spot, I'd agree with that. It's just, man, tough to get against Pittsburgh. That offense, they could have their way. And then this is another issue with those linebackers at Denver. I mean, Todd Davis, thankfully, he's healthy. But Brandon Marshall and that gimp knee, Josie Jewell's in there for him now. But I don't know what kind of linebacker effort we're going to see against that Vance McDonald, who is just, I mean, I've never seen Vance look like this. That's, I hate to put it out there, man, but would not be surprised if he is juicing. I mean, he is just jacked right now, and tackling him is just a risky proposition for any NFL defender. I don't care who you are. That kid, he's probably going to get loose in this game, and there's just so many skill position weapons against this Denver defense that ain't what it used to be. So that's where I'd worry a little bit. But no, as far as the spot probably would lean, it's Broncos.
Well, and I just actually ran this query to see teams that play a road game and then go and play on the road in Denver since 2010 are 12-10 against the spread, 54.5%. Small sample size there of 22 games. But again, you know, the uniqueness of this spot with Pittsburgh off of that playoff revenge game with how they won that game, you know, I think that maybe Denver winds up on my card, like I said here. If I get 3.5 instead of the 3 that's out there, a decent chance that one may sneak onto the board as my fifth play. But, Joe Everett, really appreciate you helping me out here. Again, I realize that everyone will hear this on Friday, but still, in any event, since we're recording on Wednesday night, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, bud. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again here next week.
All right, will do. Enjoy the turkey, and talk to you soon, man.
Always good to get a chance to talk football with Joe Everett of Draft Scouts and Insider Football. Take a look here once again at the teams that I talked about that I liked in that segment. The Bills, they are plus 3 here in the Super Contest against the Jaguars this week. The Ravens are minus 10.5, as I expected. The 49ers, they're going to be as I expected with that number as well. We're also taking a look at the Cleveland Browns, who are plus 3 in the Super Contest. The Broncos are plus 3 as well, not getting the hook on that one. So maybe that one doesn't wind up being a play. But I did want to update those here now that as I'm recording and kind of piecing together this Friday show, now you know exactly what I'm looking at here for the Super Contest lines. So once again, they're looking at my four very likely plays, the Bills, 49ers, Browns, and Ravens, and then we'll see what that fifth play winds up being here as I keep taking a look at the card and you know, seeing what kind of stands out to me. So once again, unfortunately, not able to get Brent from DSI Sportsbook this week. Again, it's very tough when, you know, Wednesday is his off day, Thursday is the holiday. Usually we've been able to work around this, but unfortunately this year, just not able to do that. But in any event, looking up and down the college football card here, and again, we saw some pretty significant sharp action on that Mississippi State Ole Miss game on Thursday night, up from 8.5 to 13. I don't know what that outcome is, but you're listening to this show on Friday, so you already know what that outcome is. Getting this show out early on Friday for you, so I can talk, at least for the listeners that check it out right away, about Akron versus Ohio. Now, this was a game that moved early on in the week. When you see moves early on in the week, those are generally going to be sharper in nature. Now, they may not be moves from sharp guys over at DSI, but they are moves from sharp guys somewhere in the marketplace. So game 115-116, Akron versus Ohio. This one moved from 20 up to 23.5. Again, recording this on Wednesday night, so that's when these lines are going to be the most accurate. But that's a game where you've got an Ohio team with revenge against Akron, who beat them last year. Akron has not looked good at all. Maybe there's some things with Cato Nelson, who didn't play particularly well last week anyway. That was a sharp move on Ohio, up from 20 to 23.5. Somewhere out there in the marketplace, somebody got hit on that game, and the books had to make a move to go ahead and adjust. I think another game that saw some sharp action here, another early kickoff game, 123-124, Nebraska and Iowa. Now, up until this point on Wednesday night, we haven't seen any significant movement up to a key number. However, Nebraska has been a sharp team many times over here throughout the course of the 2018 season. They started very poorly, but they were a team, the longer that they were winless, the more of a positive regression candidate they actually were. They were moving the football. They were scoring points. They just weren't stopping anybody. Well, now that we see money hitting the board on Iowa here this week, an Iowa team that I don't think a whole lot of sharp guys have been in love with over the last few weeks, that looks like a sharp move to me. Again, it's a very minor move from 7.5 to 9, but somebody respectable out there did put a decent chunk of change down on Iowa. Now, of course, by this point in time, we may have seen some Nebraska buyback on that line. That would not surprise me at all. And keep that in mind, too, that sometimes these early week line moves can be setups to come back over the top later on in the week. That is a thing that happens out there in the marketplace. It will happen with some frequency, especially when lines are as tight as they are right now. Usually you'll see it kind of massage through a key number, not from 7.5 to 9 or anything like that. But, you know, again, the number doesn't matter until it does. So anytime you can get a better number out there, and that's what sharp guys are so good at doing, and that's really what separates sharp bettors from public bettors, is that, you know, public bettors can handicap a game. Public bettors, maybe can handicap a game better than the sharp guys in some instances because of how they pay attention to the matchups and statistics and everything else. But the big difference between sharp guys and public guys is that sharp guys are long-term winners because of their ability to get out in front of market moves, to get the best numbers, and then, of course, to have the most money to put down and to do so in an intelligent fashion, using a lot of proper bankroll management, maybe a fraction of Kelly Criterion, something like that. That's really what separates the long-term winners, the quote-unquote sharps, from the squares or the public guys. A lot of times it's about when you get down on a number and how you bet those numbers. Because you'll have a lot of public guys that might be good bettors, but they're action junkies. They're degenerates. They just chase. And if you chase, you're going to hurt yourself in the long term because you can't possibly be confident on all of those plays. So that is one of the biggest differences between sharp guys and public guys, is that the sharp guys are consistently getting the better of the number, and then also they're properly managing their bankrolls. So don't be discouraged if you feel like you're putting together good handicaps and maybe not having as much success or not getting the right line, something like that. It means that you're part of the way there, that you just have some things that you do need to work on a little bit. How about game 141, 142, Oklahoma and West Virginia? I don't know if we've necessarily seen any significant sharp money on this game, but this is a line that has danced around quite a bit. Oklahoma is now up to as high as a 3-point favorite at some shops. This one came down from Oklahoma -2.5 to a pick 'em. Now it's shot back up. So maybe some competing sharp groups on this game would be my first impression, because when you get a game that's going to have a big public handle like this, and you see this type of reactionary movement from the risk managers early on in the week, that would imply to me that somebody sharp took West Virginia early in the week, then somebody came back on Oklahoma in the middle part of the week here to drive this number back up. And of course, with limits increased as we go throughout the week here, that money that came in the middle of the week carries a little bit more weight. So Oklahoma and West Virginia sets up as a little bit of a sharp versus sharp split. Now we'll see what side the public winds up coming in on. My guess up on the Oklahoma side, but we'll just have to see where that line ultimately ends up going. Washington and Washington State, this is going to be a sharp versus public game. And this was a game, again, I'm kind of talking into the future here, but this was a game that Brad Powers and I discussed on Thursday. And this is one of those games where Washington State has had no success in this head-to-head series with Washington during the Chris Peterson tenure up there in Seattle. So that's what you're seeing here. You're seeing that sharp respect for Peterson and what he's been able to do to the Cougars over the last several seasons. You'll have the public in on Washington State because Washington's body of work, not very impressive. Washington State scores a ton of points. They're a very popular public team. The fact that we're down below 2.5, or that we're down to 2.5 as of Wednesday night, suggests to me that Washington is the clear sharp side in this game. What does that mean? Well, I think that we may put money and maybe some hints of sharp money to drive this number back up to 3, but it does look to me like Washington early on here in the betting process is a sharp team. That's not a big surprise at all because of the respect for Chris Peterson and because of some of the recent head-to-head results that we've seen in the Apple Cup. Moving over to Saturday here, very fascinating game, 145-146, Pitt and Miami. Number down from 5.5 to as low as 4 out there in the marketplace. It is worth noting, the sharpest books in the market are at 4. Bookmaker, Pinnacle, and Matchbook, all at 4. The Greek is a pretty sharp book as well. They're sitting at 5 right now as I'm recording this on Wednesday evening. But those are always good indicators for you. Where is Pinnacle? Where is Matchbook? Those are two of the shops out there that are the sharpest. Pinnacle has always been a sharp shop, has always been willing to take sharp action. You'll notice that they're very confident in their risk management skills because of the reduced juice on a lot of their games. And then Matchbook is a betting exchange. So that is literally better versus better with a commission to the house based on the format of the exchange. I would love to see a betting exchange in the United States. I think that we're very close to having one within the next 2 or 3 years. But that's one where you've got bettors basically trading prices with each other. You know, you'll have guys that say, well, I'll take +4 -115. Somebody else says, well, I'll take +4, you know, -110. And the numbers kind of move around from there. So the market sort of sets and polices itself at a betting exchange. And that's something I think is a very important distinction and one of the reasons why Matchbook is one of the sharper offshores out there, because you've got, you know, bettors competing with each other to mold the numbers. And again, I mean, that's something that Brent talks about here on this segment all the time, is that early on in the week, it's better versus odds maker. Once you start to get that cash flow going, it's better versus better. Those are guys competing with each other either for the same side or on opposite sides. And the risk managers just kind of play the role of the house and move the juice around, balance the action as much as they can, things like that. Some places will be willing to take positions. Others will not. They're just going to do whatever the action dictates. But it's very important. And it's the study of the betting odds, the study of the betting markets that are out there, is something I think is very important. It can be some next level stuff. It can be a little bit overwhelming at times, but the big takeaway here from what I'm talking about, game 145, 146, you know, when you see other books at 4.5 or 5, and you see Pinnacle and Matchbook at 4, pretty good indication that that is the sharp side. And it does look like, to this point, Pitt is the sharp side there in that game. Well, game 157, 158, pretty noticeable move here. Marshall and Florida International. FIU can win Conference USA's East Division with a victory in this game. They opened a 1.5-point favorite, which is significant in and of itself because it implies that Marshall would be a neutral site favorite. And now the line is all the way up to Marshall -3. Definite sharp action somewhere in the marketplace on this game. When you see a game of this caliber, when you've got Ohio State against that team up north, Washington, Washington State, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Florida, Florida State. When you've got some of these big-time premier tilts and you see some line moves there, maybe that's kind of people massaging the market, trying to get some prices, maybe some early public action at times from some deep-pocketed types of, you know, whale types of guys. When you see a move on Marshall and FIU, a game of that magnitude, it is a sharp move. So Marshall up to a 3-point favorite, pretty much market-wide here. That is one of the bigger sharp moves of the week. Again, crossing zero, not the biggest of deals, but making it all the way up to 3, and in some instances 3 with extra juice here on Wednesday night, that is definitely a sharp move. If we get some buyback here that brings this number down off of 3 to 2.5, rest assured there's another sharp group or sharp individual taking the FIU side. When you see a big move like that, and then you see that line come back down off under that key number, that is a sharp coming in on the opposite side. I do think we get that scenario here with this FIU game. I mean, you know, I think my power ratings have been pretty good this year. I do have FIU favored in this spot. FIU has more to play for. So I do think this number ultimately does come down, but it is very interesting to see somebody early in the week take this very sharp position on the Marshall side. Game 161, 162, Wolverines, Buckeyes. Ohio State has not played well. This number up from 3.5 to as high as 5 in the marketplace. 5 at some of the more public books. You know, those bookmakers still at 4 as I'm recording this here on Wednesday night. Pinnacle and Matchbook are at 4.5. Matchbook dealing -112 on the 4.5 right now for Michigan. So, wish I hadn't said it. But in any event here, you know, you've got this game where a big public handle, a game that everybody's going to watch. And right now, the Wolverines are the sharp side. And I don't know if there's actual sharp money out there in the marketplace or if this is just kind of, you know, the books positioning themselves, because there will be people that take Ohio State as a home underdog. It's just going to happen. I mean, this is rare territory in this rivalry, especially over the last 20 years, for the Buckeyes to be a home dog in this situation. But the body of work would suggest that they deserve to be an underdog. And in fact, in my personal power ratings, I actually have this number 5.5, and I'm a Buckeyes fan. Now, we'll see if that number comes back down, but so far early on in the week, it does appear that that team up north is a little bit of a sharper side in this particular matchup. Game 175, 176 is pretty interesting here. Old Dominion and Rice. We've reached a point of resistance, at least as of Wednesday night, with Rice down from +10 to +7.5. Not getting to 7 is important here, because if you got to 7, we would know that this is some significant, very serious type of sharp action. The fact that we're still sitting at 7.5, haven't fallen from one pseudo key number to a key number, suggests to me that we had some people throw out some lines here on Rice that kind of liked them a little bit. But it wasn't anything to get the books to go all the way down to 7 and run the risk of getting that Old Dominion money back on that key number. Because a lot of guys, you know, look, you'd rather take 7 than 7.5 in a favorite roll. It does open up a push. You know, in that respect, the fact that we're still sitting 7.5 out here does tell me that there was some involvement early on in the week, but it wasn't really enough to push that number down to another key number. So I think that's kind of intriguing. If we see this number go back up, it's going to be sharper money on the Old Dominion side. The public not going to be invested in Old Dominion versus Rice, not with everything that's going on here this weekend. Game 181-182, Utah State, Boise State. Boise State's a little bit of a Utah State, a little bit of a sharp side here in this spot. Off of the key number of 3, down to 2.5, Boise State on the Smurf turf. Probably going to be the more public side, even though Utah State is the higher-ranked team. And sometimes we get a lot of public bettors that just kind of play those rankings and things of that sort. But Utah State is a legitimate top 20 type of team from a power rating standpoint. I don't think a lot of people have Boise State there. So I believe my number is 1 on this game. I do think this sets up as a little bit of a sharp versus public split type of game, with Boise State being the name brand, the been there, done that type of factor. Sharp guys kind of aligning themselves with Utah State. I guess probably the way that we keep seeing this line go for that Mountain West Conference, Mountain Division Championship game. UAB and Middle Tennessee. This number gone from Middle Tennessee minus 2.5 to UAB minus 3. Pretty interesting here because UAB has nothing to play for. If FIU loses to Marshall, Middle Tennessee can win the East Division with a victory, or would win, I guess, the division with a victory. But they're not taking the money here this week. That is on UAB, so make do with that what you will here. Looking at the rest of the card, Florida and Florida State. Florida opened a 3-point favorite with extra juice. Florida State trying to keep alive that 36-year bowl streak. Pretty significant move here. When you go from 3 up to as high as 7, as we see out there in the marketplace, definite sharp action hitting the board on Florida. My guess is if we had Brent on the show, he would have talked about it hitting Florida at minus 3 or minus 3.5. We're all the way up to 6, 6.5, even some 7s out there. Sharp action definitely on the Gators side. Florida State, not a very good team. Maybe last week was more of an indication about Boston College and the situation that they're in right now. But definite sharp action here on the Florida side. We'll see if we get that Florida State buyback. I don't know if it comes in the form of sharp action, but you know that will be a game you definitely want to take a little bit of a look at as we get closer to the weekend here. North Texas and UTSA. This went up from 18.5 to 24.5 here. When you talk about Conference USA games, definite sharp action coming in on the North Texas side here for this one to move this game 6 points. You don't really see moves of 6 points in week 13 unless it's something like, well, a division has already been decided, a team in a late game has nothing to play for, something like that. You generally won't see moves of this magnitude, but we do get one here, North Texas and UTSA. Probably thinking North Texas took some sharp money somewhere in the 19 range, probably blowing right through 3 touchdowns. None of these are key numbers by any means, but you know, again, a 6-point move here certainly suggests that the books are dying to get some UTSA money back on game 223, 224. Game 225, 226, Notre Dame and USC. Notre Dame opened an 8-point favorite. We're up to 11 already out there in the marketplace. Even some of the more public shops going to 11.5. I mean, this is obvious. You know, Notre Dame, this is the last hurdle for them. Not a whole lot of trust in USC. I do think we probably see somebody bite back on the Trojan side here for this one. It is a long trip for Notre Dame. They do have all of the pressure in this scenario. But if you want to step in front of Notre Dame to take USC, you go right ahead and do it. And there will be sharp guys out there that do it. They will look at their power ratings and say, you know what, I have this number 9. I have this number 9.5. I'll take the 11. I'll take the 10.5. Give it a shot here. You will see it, but the avalanche of public money on Notre Dame probably will obscure that a little bit in a game that will wind up having a pretty big betting handle, most likely very one-sided on the Fighting Irish side. Game 227, 228, Auburn and Alabama. Not really seeing a whole lot here in this game. Alabama, 24-point favorite in the Iron Bowl this year. Biggest favorite role for them in this head-to-head series, obviously. I think the kick 6 was probably the second biggest. Maybe not the biggest. I guess Auburn did have some pretty bad years before Gus Malzahn and Cam Newton and, you know, all the things that they had going on there. But Alabama still in this very big favorite role. We may see some Auburn money hit the board. Alabama does have some injury concerns with Tua and Jalen Hurts and some of the other guys that are out there. They do have more things to worry about next week when they play Georgia in the SEC championship game. So maybe that number does kind of dance around a little bit, maybe comes down a little bit on game day. But for right now, nothing notable in terms of sharp action. Arizona State and Arizona, last game on the board for FBS teams, 233-234. Arizona State down from 3 to 1.5. Looks like a sharp move here on Arizona. Again, we've reached a point of resistance, so maybe it was just one group early on in the week that did like the home dog Wildcats in the Territorial Cup here. But, you know, again, this is one of those where moving off of a key number early in the week, you know, the books certainly would expect public money on Arizona State here. And Arizona State has been something of a sharp darling at times as well. But for Arizona, you know, we saw Arizona take some money last week. Early on in the week, we've seen Arizona take money at various points throughout the season here. Just a balancing act early on in the week. And again, as I'm doing this, it's only Wednesday. Lots of time for money to come in. Some of these moves I'm talking about may have already moved, and I do apologize for that. Nature of the beast here with the holiday week. But it's important to study the odds screen. You know, it's important to know what these moves mean, what numbers mean at certain books, all those types of things. You definitely want to try to keep that in mind as much as you possibly can. Move on over to Sunday here. Look at the NFL card game, 251-252, Jacksonville and Buffalo. Buffalo does appear to be a sharp side here early on in the week for this game. Down from 4 to 3. We've even blown through 3.5 at most places. 3 with extra juice, though. 3 minus 25, 3 minus 15, things like that out there in the market. So this is the stopping point. And again, you try not to go through key numbers when you don't have to, because somebody out there may have gotten a 4 or 3.5. You go down to 2.5 as a book. You open yourself up to get sided. You open yourself up for a middle. Kind of the cardinal rule. You really don't want to get middled, particularly around a key number like a 3 in the NFL. So don't expect to see this number go down to 2.5 unless the books are desperately in need of Jacksonville public action. I think 3 with favorite juice is probably the way that this one stays, but it does look like we have seen some sharp money out there on the Buffalo Bills. New York Giants and Philadelphia Eagles, 257-258. Anytime you see a number open in the dead zone between 4 and 6, it's kind of a sign that the sports books are like, you know what, let's put this number in the middle and let's kind of let the betting market dictate where we should go here. This one did go up. It touched 6 in a few places as of the middle of the week, back down to 5.5 as I'm recording this here on Wednesday evening. You know, this is one of those where a lot of people are just going to expect Philadelphia to turn it around here at some point. It just may not be in the cards for them here this year, but you don't want to set this number too low in case Philadelphia does show up. You don't want to set it too high because market confidence is very low in Philadelphia. So you put it in the dead zone at 4.5 or 5, and then let the market decide where it wants to go with this game. So far, we haven't seen it really want to go anywhere. A move from 4.5 to 5.5 is not overly significant. Didn't really touch 6 for all that long. When it did, we got Giants money back. Did not go up above 6. So some massaging of the markets going on here with this number. And, of course, we'll have to see where this one ends up closing by kickoff on Sunday. Not a ton of movement here in the NFL betting market so far, which is a little bit unfortunate, especially with the timing in which I'm doing this. But you know, with the holiday, again, I keep coming back to that because I genuinely feel bad that we couldn't have Brent on the show here this week. But hopefully I'm doing the best I can here in his absence. Miami and Indianapolis, we'll go to Seattle and Carolina. Game 263-264. Carolina opened a 3-point favorite with some extra juice out there in the marketplace. And, you know, you had Seattle coming cross country, coming off of that game against the Packers, a little bit of a last second win there for them. So maybe the thought process sort of is here that, you know, we'll put 3 with favorite money on it and then see where this number ends up going. So far, it looks like a pretty good number. There are some 3.5s out there with extra juice. The 3s that are out there still have extra juice on the favorite side. Looks like a pretty good number here from the odds makers. I would be surprised to see this one move off of 3, to be totally honest with you. Maybe you get some people that really like Carolina. Maybe you get some people that really like Seattle. But digging in at 3 here and just moving juice around down to minus 115, down to minus 110, down to minus 105, a lot better for the books than going to 3.5 or 2.5. I think 3 is a very good number here. should wind up staying there throughout the week. Game 265, 266, Miami and Indianapolis. This just looks like an adjustment to Ryan Tannehill coming back. About a two-point adjustment, I would say, with Tannehill over Brock Osweiler. Miami coming in with some extra rest as well. Indianapolis playing about as well as they possibly can. So maybe some sharp segments kind of fading the Colts a little bit with this high of a number. But really, I think that move, just a reaction to Ryan Tannehill being a full participant in practice. Pittsburgh and Denver. This is one to definitely keep an eye on here. Pittsburgh opened a 3.5-point favorite. Down to 3. It is 3 minus 115 on the favorite side as I'm recording on Wednesday night. But this looks like your quintessential sharp versus public split. Pittsburgh off of a playoff revenge win in a spot that is very tough for them. Back-to-back road games, now playing in altitude. Looks like some early week bettors taking that hook away in the 3.5 down to 3 with pretty reasonable juice as well. So Denver definitely appears to be the sharper of the sides early on in the week here. Wouldn't surprise me if we close Pittsburgh 3 minus 20. Maybe some of the public shops closing 3.5. But I do think this game sets up as one of those sharp versus public splits out there. Green Bay, Minnesota game, 271-272. 3.5 was the opener. 3 with juice is kind of the market-wide number. Still 3.5s out there as well. This will probably be a sharp versus public split game also. Aaron Rodgers getting points, always going to be popular with the public. Minnesota didn't play very well on Sunday Night Football last week against the Bears. I think sharp guys are more of a believer in the Vikings than the public is. So I think that you see a sharp versus public split here in this one. Consensus very heavy on Green Bay early on in the week. I think we do see some sharp money leak back in, taking Minnesota minus 3, minus 15, minus 3 flat if one of those happens to pop. So I think this one does set up as one of those sharp versus public types of games. And finally, Monday Night Football, Tennessee and Houston. The entire market is not posted for this as I'm recording on Wednesday night. Injury concerns with Marcus Mariota. I think both of these teams are kind of a fade in the minds of sharp bettors. Tennessee, a little bit of an overachiever. Houston, definitely an overachiever, winning 7 in a row. So I'm not really sure what happens with this number, where it ends up going. It'll probably sit 6 for a while. And I can tell you that a lot of people probably will have Houston teasers live on Monday night. So that will be the thing that we can watch for there on Monday. But, you know, for right now, without a lineup in all the books, pretty hard for me to say. So again, my apologies that I couldn't get Brent here on today's show. Hopefully I did a pretty decent job pinch hitting there and kind of talking about the market and looking for some of the things that you want to pay attention to out there. As I mentioned, we won't be on the show here. We won't be on the air on Monday. I apologize for that. I just unable to do the show on Monday. So what we'll try to do is we'll try to get Kyle Hunter either on Wednesday in Brian Leonard's time slot, or we'll just do an extended show on Tuesday, something like that. I'll work that out with him and see what works out best for him. But no show on Monday. I do sincerely apologize. But, you know, we'll do everything we can to get Kyle on the show on Tuesday or Wednesday and go ahead and give you pretty much as much of a full week of Bang the Book Radio as we possibly can. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend. And I will talk to you again on Monday.